So if you knew some wise sage or guru who you could ask three questions, what would they be? I'm not talking about asking God three questions. That's another sermon. Think more along the lines of a mentor, a wise family member, or even that bearded guy who sits alone on top of the mountain and makes appearances in comic strips. I'm not talking about how many licks does it take to get to the Tootsie Roll center of a Tootsie Pop. The world may never know that one. I'm thinking more along the lines of advice or guidance. Like, how do you know that he's the one? Or what should my college major be? Or I've got so many important and meaningful things to do and not enough time. How do I prioritize? Or is it, whatever the it is at the time, is it worth it? Our story for today is about those kinds of questions. Three Questions is written and illustrated by John Muth, but it's based on a story by Leo Tolstoy. War and Peace, This Is Not. Let's listen. There once was a boy named Nikolai who sometimes felt uncertain about the right way to act. I want to be a good person, he told his friends, but I don't always know the best way to do that. Nikolai's friends understood and they wanted to help him. If only I could find the answers to my three questions, Nikolai continued, then I would always know what to do. When is the best time to do things? Who is the most important one? And what is the right thing to do? Nikolai's friends considered his first question, then Sonia the heron spoke. To know the best time to do things, one must plan in advance, she said. Gogol the monkey, who had been rooting through some leaves to find something good to eat, said, you will know when to do things if you watch and pay close attention. Then Pushkin the dog, who was just dozing off, rolled over and said, you can't pay attention to everything yourself. You need a pack to keep watch and help you decide when to do things. For example, Gogol, a coconut is about to fall on your head. Nikolai thought for a moment and then he asked his second question. Who is the most important one? Those who are closest to heaven, said Sonia, circling up in the sky. Those who know how to heal the sick, said Gogol, stroking his bruised noggin. Those who make the rules, growled Pushkin. Nikolai thought some more. Then he asked the third question, what is the right thing to do? Flying, said Sonia. Having fun all the time, laughed Gogol. Fighting, barked Pushkin right away. Then the boy thought for a long while. He loved his friends. He knew they were all trying their best to help him answer his questions, but the answers didn't seem quite right. Then an idea came to him. I know, he thought, I will ask Leo the turtle. He has lived a very long time. Surely he will know the answers I am looking for. Nikolai hiked high up into the mountains where the old turtle lived all alone. When Nikolai arrived, he found Leo digging a garden. The turtle was old, and digging was hard for him. I have three questions, and I came to ask your help, Nikolai said. When is the best time to do things? Who is the most important one? What is the right thing to do? Leo listened carefully, but he only smiled. Then he went on with his digging. You must be tired, Nikolai said at last. Let me help you. The turtle gave him his shovel and thanked him. And because it was easier for a young boy to dig than it was for an old turtle, Nikolai kept on digging until the rows were finished. But just as he finished, the wind blew wildly and rain burst from the darkened clouds, and as they moved toward the cottage for shelter, Nikolai suddenly heard a cry for help. Running down the path, he found a panda whose leg had been injured by a fallen tree. Carefully, Nikolai carried her into Leo's house and made a splint for her leg with a stick of bamboo. The storm raged on. Banging at the doors and windows, the panda woke up. "Where am I?" she said. "And where is my child?" The boy ran out of the cottage and down the path. The roar of the storm was deafening. Pushing against the howling wind and drenching rain, he ran farther into the forest. There he found the panda's child, cold and shivering on the ground. The little panda was wet and scared, but alive. Nikolai carried her inside and made her warm and dry. Then he laid her in her mother's arms. Leo smiled when he saw what the boy had done. The next morning, the sun was warm, birds sang, and all was well with the world. The panda's leg was healing nicely, and she thanked Nikolai for saving her and her baby from the storm. At that moment, Sonia, Gogol, and Pushkin arrived to make sure everyone was all right. Nikolai felt great peace within himself. He had wonderful friends, and he had saved the panda and her child. But he also felt disappointed. He still had not found the answers to his three questions. So he asked Leo one more time. The old turtle looked at the boy. "But your questions have been answered," he said. "They have?" asked the boy. "Yesterday, if you had not stayed to help me dig my garden, you wouldn't have heard the panda's cries for help in the storm. Therefore, the most important time was the time you spent digging the garden. The most important one at that moment was me, and the most important thing to do was to help me with my garden. Later, when you found the injured panda, the most important time was the time you spent mending her leg and saving her child. The most important ones were the panda and her baby, and the most important thing to do was to take care of them and make them safe. Remember then that there is only one important time, and that time is now. The most important one is always the one you are with, and the most important thing is to do good for the one who is standing at your side. For these, my dear boy, are the answers to what is most important in this world. This is why we are here." The end.
Sorry. That's... Sorry. Oh, come on. There we go.
So the three questions to which young Nikolai seeks answers are: when is the best time to do things? Who is the most important one, and what is the right thing to do? His friends Sonia the heron, Gogol the monkey, and Pushkin the dog offer their own answers to each question. As much as he loved his friends, Nikolai knew their answers weren't the right ones, so he set out to ask the wise turtle, Leo. In Leo Tolstoy's original version of this story, it's not a boy, but a king. And the king figured that if he always knew the right time to begin everything, if he knew who were the right people to listen to and whom to avoid, and above all, if he always knew what was the most important thing to do, he would never fail in anything he might undertake. Initially, the king sought answers from the people in his kingdom, but came up short. So the king disguised himself as a peasant and asked the wise hermit who lived in the woods. What follows is similar to what happened with Nikolai, but instead of helping a hurt panda, the king found himself helping an enemy who had sworn vengeance upon the king. It's a much more powerful encounter than the panda and the boy had. In the end, the wise hermit tells the king that he already got his answers. The hermit sums it up. "Remember then, there is only one time that is important, now, It is the most important time because it is the only time when we have any power. The most necessary man is he with whom you are, for no man knows whether he will ever have dealings with anyone else. And the most important affair is to do him good, because for that purpose alone was man sent into this life. The story that Jesus tells in Luke is one we've probably heard more times than we can count. The questions that Nikolai and the king ask in the two versions of the three question stories are not that different from the questions that the lawyer asks Jesus. "Teacher," he said, "what must I do to inherit eternal life?" Now, the lawyer asks this question to test Jesus, Luke tells us. But Nikolai and the king ask their questions because they genuinely want to know the answers. When the right answer doesn't satisfy the lawyer, he asks another question. Wanting to justify himself, he asks Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" The lawyer, seeking to justify himself, understands the law as gospel and expects that he can present his obedience to the law as proof of faith. But it doesn't work like that. The turtle and the hermit interpret what happens to the boy and the king to give them their answers. Jesus tells the lawyer a story of a man who fell into the hands of robbers. To the priest, the Levite, and the Samaritan, the man in the ditch was a nuisance. But according to Leo the turtle and the hermit in the woods, this is the answer to all three of the questions. What is the best time? Who is the most important one? And what is the right thing to do? No rule book can answer that for you. The message from the wise sages in the stories and from Jesus is stunningly simple. But it is not simplistic. Even the scheming lawyer, the one who sought first to test Jesus and then to justify himself, finally sees that. Jesus asks him, "Who is the neighbor of the one who fell into the hands of robbers?" The lawyer cannot bear to say the Samaritan, but he knows. The one who showed him mercy. Though he was fixed on justification, he got it. The one who showed him mercy, the one who showed him kindness. It's a simple message, but not simplistic. The lawyer is troubled because the last person he wants to admit is his neighbor is a Samaritan. And the last person he wants to admit is showing mercy and following God's law is a Samaritan. But the biblical ethic of kindness often arises from unexpected sources, like a Samaritan, or the enemy the king encounters in Tolstoy's tale. Douglas John Hall says, "Until it is grasped that at the level of true morality, that is, where basic attitudes and acts are concerned, where the fruits by which we are known become conspicuous, genuine goodness and moral authenticity cannot be restricted to any one people or creed, and do not depend upon having learned the right theoretical answers." The lawyer wanted the right theoretical answers. He thought a straightforward, by-the-book answer would be sufficient, but Jesus breaks the question open with an answer that cannot be confined to a rule book. Nikolai and the king want a straightforward, by-the-book answer to each of their questions, perhaps a flow chart, if this, then that, to determine the right time, the right one, and the right action. But the answers they get cannot be confined to a rule book or a flow chart. The lawyer, not surprisingly, is concerned about the law. What are the right answers to the questions according to the law? Our passage from Jeremiah also gives us some insight into the law and how we can go about finding these answers. From the prophet we hear God's words, "I will put my law within them and I will write it on their hearts. And I will be their God and they shall be my people. No longer shall they teach one another or say to each other, 'Know the Lord,' for they shall all know me. From the least of them to the greatest, says the Lord. For I will forgive their iniquity and remember their sin no more. God will write the law on our hearts. The law here changes from an external piece of wisdom meant to guide us in knowledge of the Lord to something that is innately within us. Nikolai can only know the answers to his questions when he has lived them out in his own heart, not by consulting a book, a wise turtle, or a flowchart. When the law is written on our hearts, when we truly know the Lord and take the law within us, the law ceases to be a burden. Instead, it becomes embodied in those committed to it through their behavior. When Jeremiah prophesied to the people, they were in captivity in Babylon. The people to whom the prophet spoke felt incapable and powerless to live the lifestyle demanded by the laws. So God proposed a new approach. I will put my law within them, and I will write it on their hearts, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people. Now, we certainly are not in the same place they were. Despite our own feelings or headlines to the contrary, we are not in Babylonian captivity. But we may feel like we are deeply displaced. We are not in Babylon, but we are in a cultural environment that can seem hostile to the Christian faith as we understand it. Despite claims that America was founded as a Christian nation, and in spite of public figures proudly waving the flag of Christianity, we live in an environment that can seem hostile to the principles of Christian life, hostile to the kingdom goals of peace, justice, righteousness, mercy, and love. Just like the Jews in exile, we have ways to remind us of those goals and principles. We have ways to stay in touch with the law written on our hearts. Walter Brueggemann says, "Our worship, spiritual discipline, and education seek to help us practice. Practice memory in a world of amnesia. Practice grief in a world of denial. Practice sacrament in a world of technique. Practice generosity in a world of scarcity. Practice obedience in a world of indulgence. Practice hope in a world of despair." This is how we practice the law installed in our hearts. The lawyer in Jesus' encounter sought to practice the law strictly by the book, which in his defense is really his job. But that's not our job. Jesus tells the lawyer to love God with everything in him and love his neighbor as himself. But that isn't good enough. The lawyer believes he can only obey the law if he knows precisely what it demands. There's no room for fuzzy gray areas or conditions. Of course, there is at least a bit of that lawyer in each of us. And there's a bit of that lawyer in both the boy Nikolai and in Tolstoy's King. Not necessarily the justification part, but the seeking specific instructions for how to live well and right part. Instead of giving us flowcharts for following the law, Jesus tells a story about a man on a journey. Instead of giving us detailed lists of specific conditions for following the law, God writes the law on our hearts so that we can be guided on our journeys. Pastor Cynthia Jarvis says, "When we seek to live as if the gospel were law, we set off down a road not knowing where we are going. We travel by grace as radically vulnerable disciples sent to respond to the human in the other along the way. We travel on our journey, just like the man who fell into the hands of robbers, by grace. And grace does not stick to a flowchart or a rule book. Thanks be to God for that. Grace fulfills the law in ways we cannot comprehend or ever nail down. God writes that grace and the gospel law on our hearts to guide us on our journey with Christ through this life." I started by asking what questions you might want to pose to a wise guru, not God. But I remember when I was going through confirmation many years ago, having that question posed to the class. If you could ask God one question, what would it be? My response, my question for God back then was, did we get it right, or are we way off track? Perhaps that is at the heart of many of our questions, at the heart of the questions in all three of these stories. In the gospel, Jesus asks, which of these three do you think was the neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of the robbers? The lawyer said, the one who showed him mercy. Jesus said to him, go and do likewise. The lawyer got the answer to his question. Nikolai and Tolstoy's King seek answers to their three questions, and they find them as they live out the answers. Leo the Turtle says, remember then that there is only one important time, and that time is now. The most important one is always the one you are with, and the most important thing is to do good for the one who is standing at your side. For these, my dear one, are the answers to what is most important in the world. This is why we are here. Who is my neighbor? The one who showed mercy. Go and do likewise. Amen.